OK, we are breaking into Brussels now, where NATO Secretary-General Jens Stoltenberg is speaking to the media after the military alliance met in the Belgian capital to discuss the war in Ukraine. Let's listen in.
Summit of NATO leaders to address the biggest threat to our security in a generation, President Putin's war against Ukraine. The people of Ukraine are resisting with courage and determination, fighting for their freedom and for their future. We stand with them. President Zelensky addressed us with an impassioned message, thanking NATO allies for the significant support we are providing and stressing the vital importance of even more military assistance. Today, NATO leaders agreed that we must and will provide further support to Ukraine. We will continue to impose unprecedented costs on Russia, and we will reinforce allied deterrence and defence. Leaders approved our four new battle groups in Bulgaria, Hungary, Romania and Slovakia. These are in addition to the four already in the Baltic countries and Poland. So we have eight multinational NATO battlegroups now, from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea. Across Europe, there are 100,000 US troops supporting NATO efforts. And European allies and Canada have also stepped up. We have 40,000 forces under direct NATO command, mostly in the eastern part of the alliance, backed by major air and naval power, including an unprecedented five carrier strike groups from the high north to the Mediterranean. Today, NATO leaders agreed to reset our deterrence and defence for the longer term, to face a new security reality. On land, we will have substantially more forces in the eastern part of the alliance at higher readiness, with more pre-positioned equipment and supplies. In the air, we will deploy more jets and strengthen our integrated air and missile defense. At sea, we will have carrier strike groups, submarines, and significant numbers of combat ships on a persistent basis. We will also strengthen our cyber defenses and enhance our exercises, focusing on collective defense and interoperability. I expect we will decide on the details at our next summit in Madrid in June. Today, Allied leaders also agreed to provide further support to Ukraine, helping to uphold their fundamental right to self-defense. Allies are also equipping Ukraine with significant military supplies, including anti-tank and air defense systems and drones, which are proving highly effective, as well as substantial financial and humanitarian aid. Today, we agreed to do more, including cyber security assistance and equipment to help Ukraine protect against biological, chemical, radiological, and nuclear threats. This could include detection, protection, and medical supplies, as well as training for decontamination and crisis management. We are determined to do all we can to support Ukraine, and I welcome the concrete offers of assistance made by allies today. At the same time, we have a responsibility to ensure the conflict does not escalate further, because this would be even more dangerous and more devastating. Allies agreed that we must also increase our support for other partners at risk, from Russia at risk from Russian threats and interference, including Georgia and Bosnia and Herzegovina. working together and with the European Union, we must help them uphold their sovereignty and strengthen their resilience. We also addressed Beijing's role in the crisis. Today, allied leaders called on China to refrain from supporting Russia's war effort. China must not provide economic or military support for the Russian invasion. Instead, Beijing should use its significant influence on Russia and promote an immediate peaceful resolution. Allies also agree that Belarus must stop acting as an accomplice to Putin's invasion. At today's meeting, leaders reaffirmed our strong commitment to NATO's open door policy under Article 10 of the Washington Treaty. NATO enlargement has been an historic success, spreading democracy, freedom and prosperity across Europe. 1 month since the start of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, NATO's security environment has fundamentally changed for the long haul, and we are responding. But security does not come for free, and doing more will cost more. So NATO leaders agreed to redouble efforts to meet the defence investment pledge we made in 2014. Allies will submit additional plans on how to meet the pledge in time for the Madrid summit in June. And I welcome that a number of allies today announced plans for significant increases in defence spending. At this dangerous time, transatlantic unity and solidarity are vital. Europe and North America are standing and will continue to stand strong together in NATO. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Okay, CNN.
Hi, Mr. Secretary General, thank you. President Zelensky, in his address to NATO, accused Russia of deploying phosphorus munitions. I'm wondering whether NATO has seen evidence of that and what your response is or would be. And then I'm wondering, did you discuss during this meeting a permanent basing of forces in any of these countries, such as the Baltics, and abandoning the NATO-Russia Founding Act?
So we are resetting NATO's deterrence and defence for the long term, with more troops, with more air assets and more maritime capabilities. We have already increased our presence in the East, and today we decided on 4 new battle groups, and the leaders agreed to task our military commanders to provide options for a long-term reset of our presence, our military posture in the eastern part of the alliance and across the whole alliance. Details will be then decided at our summit in June. But that comes on top of what we have already done. So this is long-term. We are prepared for long haul, because we can already today say that the Russian invasion, President Putin's invasion of Ukraine, has changed our security environment for the long term. It's a new reality. It's a new normal, and NATO is responding for the long term. We have seen very credible reports about the use of the military force against civilians, and of course this is of great concern for all NATO allies.
NBC.
Secretary General, thank you for taking my question. How do you believe NATO will respond if China begins to support Russia economically and perhaps with military supplies? And also, do you believe that there's a role to play for NATO when it comes to alleviating energy costs? And I'm talking about speaking directly to Saudi Arabia and other OPEC producers. Thank you.
So NATO allies are coordinating their efforts when it comes to also energy security, and it was also addressed in the meeting today, to step up supplies, to diversify sources of supply, and also, to reduce dependence on supplies from Russia. And later on today, I also participate in the G7 meeting, and of course, in different frameworks, G7, working with the EU, there are different formats where NATO allies address the need to strengthen energy security and reduce dependence on Russian oil and gas. Our message to China is that they should join the rest of the world and clearly condemn the brutal war against Ukraine and not support Russia, neither with economic support or, of course, not with military support.
Okay, we'll go to Interfax Ukraine, lady in the second row. Yeah.
General, news agency Interfax Ukraine, I would like to ask you if Polish leadership put at the table today for discussion the proposal to send peacekeeping mission to Ukraine, and if yes, what kind of discussion it was, and is there some conclusion? Thank you.
As we discussed a wide range of issues, and the message is that we have to stand united. And also that we need to provide support to Ukraine, but at the same time, we have a responsibility to ensure that this conflict do not become a full-fledged war between NATO and Russia. And that's also the reason why allies have made it clear that we will not deploy troops on the ground in Ukraine, because the only way to do that is to be prepared to engage in full conflict with Russian troops.
Okay, Financial Times.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. Congratulations on your annual extension. You said in the statement that allies agreed to enhance preparedness and readiness for chemical, biological, radiological and nuclear threats. Is that based on credible intelligence that those threats could be imminent? And how does the alliance strengthen its protection against those threats? Thank you.
So we are concerned, partly because we see the rhetoric and we see that Russia is trying to create some kind of pretext accusing Ukraine, United States, NATO allies for preparing to use chemical and biological weapons. And we have seen before that this way of accusing others is actually a way to create a pretext for do the same themselves. And of course, the accusations against Ukraine and NATO allies are absolutely false. Any use of chemical weapons will totally change the nature of the conflict. It will be a blatant violation of international law, and it will have widespread consequences and, of course, be extremely dangerous. It will affect the people in Ukraine, but there's also a risk that will have a direct effect on people living in NATO countries, because we can see contamination, we can see the spread of chemical agents or biological weapons into our countries. We also know that Russia has used chemical agents against its own opposition, and they have used it on NATO territory in Salisbury before. And we also know that Russia has facilitated, supported the Assad regime in Syria when they used chemical weapons against their own population. So this just highlights the importance of ending this war immediately, because this is a dangerous situation. And therefore we impose the sanctions, so therefore we support Ukraine. Allies agreed to supply equipment to help Ukraine protect against chemical, biological, radiological and nuclear threats. This could include detection equipment, protection and medical support, as well as training for decontamination and crisis management. We are also enhancing allies' preparedness and readiness for chemical and biological and nuclear threats. Our top military commander, General Walters, has activated NATO's chemical, biological, radiological and nuclear defense elements, and allies are deploying additional chemical and biological and nuclear defenses to reinforce our existing and new battle groups. So we are taking measures both to support Ukraine and also to defend ourselves.
Okay, we'll go to Al Jazeera.
Secretary General James Bayes from Al Jazeera. President Zelensky, when he addressed you, recalled the fact he first spoke to you a month ago, and he says he didn't get clear answers. So this time he asked you specifically for 1% of all your tanks, for 1% of all your aircraft, for multi-launch rocket systems, anti-ship weapons and means of air defence. A very specific list. What is your clear answer?
We all listened very carefully to President Zelensky, and many of the leaders in the room have had contacts with him over these weeks. I also spoke with him, and the Ukrainian defense minister participated in our defense ministerial meeting last week. We listened carefully, and of course we took note of his very compassionate message to all NATO allies. NATO allies provide significant support to Ukraine. And we provide also lethal weapons, advanced systems, and also systems that help them to shoot down planes and attack battle tanks with anti-tank weapons and many other types of systems, including drones. I will not go into the details of the exact type of systems we are deploying. There's close contact between NATO allies and Ukraine. But what I can say is that allies do what they can to support Ukraine with weapons so Ukraine can defend themselves. Self-defense is a right enshrined in the UN Charter. At the same time, we have a responsibility to prevent this conflict from becoming a full-fledged war in Europe involving not only Ukraine and Russia, but NATO allies and Russia. That will be more dangerous and more devastating. And I think we have to be honest about that, and that's exactly what we have been in our meeting today and also what I say to you in the press conference now.
So again, no clear answer.
Well, what we do is that we are delivering a lot of equipment, and that is an answer, but I will not go into the details. I don't think that's wise for operational reasons if I listed exactly what and when and how we are delivering essential equipment to Ukraine. NATO allies have stepped up, and it's essential for the progress they have been able to make in the fight against the invading Russian forces.
Thank you very much, colleagues. I know there are many questions. I'm afraid the Secretary General needs to go to the G7 meeting, but there will be other briefings throughout the day. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
OK, that was NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg addressing the media after a meeting of NATO leaders, which lasted more than 3 hours. His press conference was delayed by at least an hour. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky addressed the leaders virtually in that meeting, which was closed to the press. He called for more military aid and had a very specific list of requests. All this comes as today marks a month of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The schedule in Brussels is jammed, packed, with three summits taking place. The meeting of NATO allies, which we just heard from Jens Stoltenberg about, as well as a meeting of G7 leaders, which is happening now, and then followed by a meeting of EU leaders. So NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg just spoke to the media then about how NATO has agreed to provide more military support to Ukraine for the longer term. He spoke specifically about four areas. He said that more forces will be deployed on the ground in Eastern Europe. He went on to say that more assets will also be used in the air. At sea, by way of combat ships and submarines, will be deployed. He also said that the alliance will strengthen its cyber defences. He said the details of these four specific areas will be finalised in Madrid at a summit in June. He said that the allies are also preparing for the potential for Russia to use chemical weapons. So that was NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg speaking to the media after a meeting of NATO leaders in Brussels. US President Joe Biden is there. He's there in an effort to keep America's allies united against Russia's war in Ukraine. So after that meeting of NATO allies, it'll be followed by the G7 and then EU leaders. He faces steep challenges, the US president, as the allies seek new measures to punish Russian President Vladimir Putin. To break it all down for us, let's bring in our diplomatic editor, James Bayes, who is in Brussels and was inside that press conference. James, promises of more military support. What from NATO? Will it provide Ukraine's president with what he asked for?
No, because Ukraine's president made it quite clear the specifics that he wanted to see from NATO. He said that the thing that had pained him most a month ago when he'd first put his request, particularly his request to try and stop Russian aircraft, which he said because they had no means of stopping them, they're effectively a weapon of mass destruction. He said that what they really needed a clear answer from NATO on very specific requests, and he made very specific requests in his speech, in his address. I'm not sure whether NATO leaders expected that speech to be made public, but it was. The Ukrainian mission to the United Nations and then the Ukrainian president's office put out the video, which you've seen, of that speech. Mr. Stoltenberg, yes, says they will have done a great deal, which is true, and he says they'll do more, but he wouldn't answer on those specifics. His reason, despite the fact that President Zelensky had asked for a clear answer, is because that would be giving information to Russia. What we did get more details of is what NATO's going to do to protect itself. Again, I think they were green-lighting things that are already in progress. We now have 8 battle groups that are in the countries closest to Russia on that eastern flank of NATO. 4 of them didn't exist before the invasion. They've been put into place now. So progress, I think, some progress, but not what the Ukrainians would have wanted. The other bit of news we got from this was about Mr. Stoltenberg himself. He tweeted just moments before that news conference, and as the final communique from this first of 3 summits came out, that he was staying on. He's going to be the UN's, the NATO Secretary General for another year. His term extended into 2023. So there is the same continuity at this time of crisis. Mr. Stoltenberg, actually, who is Norwegian, former Norwegian Prime Minister, was going to return to his country to be Norway's central bank governor. Well, he's going to stay at the helm of NATO for another year, 1 year extension.
All right, thank you very much for bringing us up to speed there, James Bayes, our diplomatic editor in Brussels. Let's bring in Bart Shevchik now, who's also in Brussels and has been listening in on to that press conference. He's a visiting senior fellow at the German Marshall Fund. So we heard from the Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg about what they're going to provide further in terms of military. What did you make of what he said, and that in comparison to what the Ukrainian president actually asked for?
Well, thanks for having me. This is, you know, an illustration of a unified West in action, and it's quite remarkable how quickly things have been put together. Within NATO, by last count, you had something like 30 NATO allies and partners providing weapons to Ukraine, very sophisticated weapons, Javelin, anti-tank missiles, anti-aircraft missiles, and now even anti-aircraft batteries, which can reach higher and with more lethality. Now, I very much appreciate the sensitivities around all the individual supplies and not wanting to disclose the operational details. To be fair, Ukraine and President Zelensky is always going to request more because they're participating in an active conflict, active hot war, defending their territory. And so I think NATO and NATO allies and partners have provided tremendous amount of support, which is why, well, partly why the Ukrainian Defense Forces have been able to resist and heroically perform on the battlefield. And this will continue. You know, this aid will not stop until Ukraine is able to prevail.
But another thing that stood out for me from that press conference was the discussion around chemical and or biological weapons. A team has been pulled together in the US in the event chemical or biological weapons are used by Russia. And interestingly, NATO is doing the same. So this really is quite a huge concern for the alliance.
It is a huge concern because the use of chemical weapons, which is, by the way, has been witnessed in recent past, unfortunately, through the use of chemical weapons in Syria, but also by Russia on European soil and going after its own political opponents. You know, this is a real threat. There have been intelligence reports about Russia accusing Ukraine of launching such an attack as a sort of false flag operation. And so, yes, this is a very considerable risk, as well as the unthinkable, but also plausible risk of a use of tactical nuclear weapon. And so both are obviously scenarios which would elevate this conflict to a significantly different stage. Now, both President Biden and NATO leaders across the board have emphasized that this would yield severe consequences against Russia. And you don't want to get into the specific hypotheticals because it ultimately depends on the specific circumstance. And again, we want to avert this from happening in the first place. But yes, you see NATO allies and partners preparing for this unthinkable scenario and supporting Ukraine to be able to be ready for it as well.
But what we're seeing in Brussels is really a picture of unity, but there are fractions beneath the surface of that. So do you believe that not everyone is necessarily on the same page when it comes to sanctioning Russia?
Well, look, this is another element of policy that's had tremendous consensus and support across the board, not only among the NATO allies and partners, but across the world. Countries such as Japan, South Korea, Australia, all supporting the sanctions regimes that have been developed in collaboration with EU countries, the UK and the United States and Canada. Now, it's also fair to say that some of the measures envisioned in terms of sanctions against gas imports or oil imports will have differential economic effects on different countries that are launching the sanctions. And so you want to strike a fine balance between exerting incredible economic leverage against Russia and at the same time make sure that you don't hamper your own economies in a way that would be disadvantageous. And so, you know, these technical discussions are going on. The EU, for its part, has committed to getting off Russia's gas supplies as well as oil supplies over time, limiting gas imports by a significant amount over the next 12 months. But these are difficult issues to actually implement in practice, and people are very much hard at work to try to figure out the details.
They certainly are. Thank you for breaking it all down for us. Bart Shefcik in Brussels, a visiting senior fellow at the German Marshall Fund. Thanks for your time on this NewsHour.
My pleasure.